Blog Talk Radio. Hello, this is Debbie Guy-Giesch with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. You guys know the drill by now. About twice a month, we meet to talk to real revenue marketers and learn their tips and tricks on how to make that transition from being a traditional marketer to a revenue marketer. And before I introduce our guest today, I'd like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketing. It is simply the process of transforming marketing from being a cost center to a revenue center. And almost every single B2B marketer out there is feeling the pressure to be accountable for revenue or some type of financial metric. And revenue marketing is that discipline that helps achieve this level of financial accountability. And every single revenue marketer that we have on the show is on the revenue marketing journey. And they're here to share what works, what does not work, and their own gotchas, or those hidden roadblocks on their journey. So today, I am so pleased to introduce our guest, Helen Whelan. She has a really super cool title. She is Editor-in-Chief and VP of Marketing and Strategic Content at Apogee. Helen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Debbie. I am very pleased to be on the show today.
Now, I met Helen earlier this year. We were both at a conference, and we were at a cocktail event, and someone introduced me. They said, this is Helen Whelan, and she's the editor-in-chief. I'm like, stop. Wait a minute. There is an editor-in-chief position at a B2B company somewhere in America. I have to find out more about this woman and what she does. So why don't you share with our listeners, Helen, a little bit about your role in the company?
Okay, great. Yeah. My title, as you say, Debbie, is Editor-in-Chief. That means my role is all about content strategy for Apogee. I was hired to build the content engine at Apogee to turn our thought leadership content into an engine for company growth. Apogee is a B2B company, delivers the products that make every business a digital business. And it is that movement, that shift to digital, that is the wind in the sails of our company, but it's also the reason why we need to do something different, I think, in the marketing space, and how content marketing has become such a thing these days, such a trend. Just think about how our lives have changed since the introduction and the uptake of the smartphone. We live our lives from the palm of our hands. We shop, we bank, we make travel arrangements, we watch our favorite shows on all kinds of devices. We do business on devices, and we expect to be able to do business digitally. We expect an exceptional experience, one that's good and intelligent and immediate, and that's true of how companies interact with businesses. So today's businesses, almost every industry needs to be able to deliver those experiences that we expect at speed, and that's what Apogee does, and that's what content marketers, that's what marketing needs to do today. It needs to educate and inspire and provide value to customers who are doing, and prospective customers who are doing business digitally and online.
So Helen, this role, did it just kind of grow organically in the company? And where did this understanding that content could make a difference in how you grow your organization?
It didn't really grow organically. Credit goes to the vision of our CEO, who hired me to build this engine. It was an understanding of the strategic differentiation and that content could be for us. And this was long before content marketing was the discipline that it is today. He created the vision, the position, because of the vision that, and the knowledge that businesses needed to do things differently in the mobile world. And with those rapidly evolving customer expectations, that we were in a place where every single aspect of the of a company needs to change and transform to operate as a digital business. I mean, that's the foundation of the thinking, and one of those things is content. You know, we were in at the beginning of a new wave of computing, a new wave of digital computing, and a lot of the goal was to seed the market, have that thought leadership in the market, what that was, how that needed to be considered by businesses across every industry. And he really saw content as a competitive advantage for us and a strategic differentiator in the market.
So if I remember our pre-interview correctly, Helen, you were hired pretty early in the company's history and have been there for the rapid growth and the going public that your company has done. Is that correct?
That's correct. I have been at Apogee for almost 4 years, and we went public this year in April.
Okay, and you've had some pretty wonderful revenue growth during that period as well. So clearly the strategy of using content to help the market understand there's a new way to do business has been really important to the growth of the company.
Critically important, and that really was the vision and the strategy.
So let's talk in more detail about what does an editor-in-chief do? So, for example, I know one of the things that we had talked about is you published an editorial calendar. So maybe you can share with us what that means to you and how that works at Apogee.
Yeah, so an editor-in-chief is responsible for driving that content that fuels all of our marketing activities, from awareness to demand and lead generation to content in our events to content on all of our channels. So I'm responsible for shaping the programs for all of those channels and for ensuring that our thought leadership is aligned and provides value to our target audiences, and aligned with our corporate messaging, aligned with and clearly communicating how our product and technology solves business challenges. Well, executing on that, it's critical. I find it's critical that you have an editorial calendar. You have visibility into what's important in the upcoming quarter, 6 months, 9 months, that you have alignment across all of the parts of the organization that contribute to getting this content created, developed, and out into the market. And that we have focus in our execution. It's very easy to just sort of start creating content because somebody thinks this is a good idea and that's a good idea. I have a good
And that is exactly the way most people do it. Somebody has an idea for how to create a piece of content, and off to the races they go. So it sounds like you're being much more planful.
Much more planful. I aim to have an editorial calendar with a three-month outlook, so on a quarterly basis. Now, I have to say it's hard to have your 3 months planned. We move at an exceptionally fast pace at Apogee, But I will say I have a 70% locked in editorial calendar every quarter, at the beginning of every quarter. And then 30% of it has to stay nimble and has to stay in a place where we can respond to market trends, where we can adjust our plan, such that we take advantage of and are there where the change is needed. If you don't have a plan, you don't know how to adjust.
Exactly. So what do you do? Does everybody sit down around a table and talk about what happened the last quarter and what they think is coming up the next quarter? And I mean, how does that process actually unfold?
So over the years, I have tried different things, and one of the things that works best for me with a very small team is an organic process. I have had editorial calendar meetings where I get a bunch of people in a room, and we discuss goals and what happened last quarter and what's on the roadmap for next quarter, and that is useful. But most of the work that goes into creating the calendar for the quarter happens over the course of 2 or 3 weeks, where I meet with and interview lots of people across the company, from the CEO, the CMO, the head of sales, the product strategist, product roadmap people, the subject matter experts who are our thought leaders, to the sales team and the sales engineering team. It's extremely important and extremely helpful for me to hear from the field. What are they hearing? What are they seeing in the market? What objections do they get while they're out there? Those are...
I love that. So you personally conduct those interviews, or does someone on your team do it, or is it a shared responsibility?
Oh, it's a lot of it is personally conduct. I mean, as I've told you, Debbie, we're a very small team. I have a couple of writers now. I didn't always have a couple of writers. So it is largely I conduct them, and, you know.
I love that. What a simple yet completely effective thing to do is go ask everyone who's involved in any aspect of content what they're seeing, what they're observing, what's working, what's not, and bake that into the plan. I think that's one of the things, Helen, we see marketers just tend to be not wanting to interview people within their own company. And it's just, I love this idea, and I love this approach. So one of the groups that you said that you interviewed was sales. So how does the sales relationship, and how does sales help you create your editorial calendar for content?
Well, I think, you know, we all know that for an effective marketing team, demand gen team, sales and marketing alignment is crucial. I think that's a particularly true for content marketing. And I find content marketing an interesting term, because I think there is no marketing today without content. But it's not, I will say, asking the sales team what content they need. Or do they need this piece of content or that piece of content? Because, as we all know, the answer would always be, yes, I want it all. It is really a much more, a very rich conversation with a lot of people to understand customer pain points, to understand what's happening in the market. And then we take that, marry it with what we're hearing from our product roadmap people and our business strategists, and formulate a plan for what is our target, what is our messaging, what is important to drive the market forward.
Again, I'm just blown away. It's just such a great, simple, elegant, very high impact strategy to have those conversations. And I also love what you said, Helen. We don't ask them what they want. We don't ask them if, you know, we say, let's have a conversation around what you're seeing in the customers, the kinds of objections you're handling, you know, what's changing in the market, and then based on that, you create the content plan. I simply love that. So
yeah,
how do you go ahead.
No, so I was just going to add that I think, you know, one of the things that is different at Apogee, maybe, to a lot of places, we have a very flat organization. And I, you know, you and I talked about this, I think, at some length. I report into the CMO, and I think over time we've obviously generated some organizational structure, but philosophically, we're flat. Our communication structures are flat. So that's, I'm really blessed with that model because, you know, you don't have a team of people. You are dependent on building your content and building your plan with content from the subject matter experts and drawing upon all of those experts in the company and leading them to a place where we're creating a valid content. So, you know, sure, sometimes it feels like herding cats, but it's a bunch of very smart and thoughtful cats. And
Oh, I love that. I've never heard the smart and thoughtful cats. I'll have to use that one. So one of the other things that we had talked about, Helen, is that you talked about, you know, once you've had those conversations and you guys have a view and understanding to what content will be created, you know, what you want to place on the editorial calendar, that you then have a process in place where you begin with, what, a pillar piece of content? Is that what you called it?
Yeah. So I follow that model, and many people talk about the approach today, but a big piece, big pillar piece of content, or a big rock piece of content, that is the core piece, and from there we make derivatives that will feed our different channels. So early on, we discovered that webcasts were one of our most effective forcing functions, really, to get a point of view or perspective crisped up and in place. And again, this kind of goes back to philosophy of working with the thought leaders and subject matter experts. I really believe in flexibility. I think some people write well, some people speak well, some people whiteboard well, and to get the content from them, you have to be able to work with them in their preferred mode. And so webcast was our first sort of big rock idea. So we would often have a plan to do a webcast or a series of webcasts around a certain topic. And then I would take that content and derivatize it into a series of blog posts, do a little more research and a little more filling in, and it becomes an ebook or a white paper. And basically the simple idea is that you have one piece with, for which the subject matter experts have formed and crisped their point of view, and that's your core source material.
Oh, my gosh. Again, I love that. What a simple idea. I think we hear marketers talk a lot about creating, you know, one piece of content and then spinning out derivatives of it. But what I've never heard someone say, Helen, is that it is a core piece of content because it has the input from everyone that needs to have input into that, whether it be sales, marketing, you know, the strategist people, the product people. And so that is the reason it becomes a core piece of content, because you've been able to crisp up the idea. That is such an elegant solution. I love that. I absolutely love that. And then do you guys, how do you determine, like, what type of content? How do you determine ebook or video or white paper or blog? Or do you just create those and then you use them as needed in the various channels?
Yes, we decide based on based on what the subject matter is in a way and who it is for. So if we think about sort of the matrix that exists in your editorial calendar is a 3x3 matrix of, in our, a three by three in my case, where I think about three types or big buckets of audience. We have a business audience, an IT technical level audience, and a developer audience. And then on the other side of my matrix is the place in the buyer journey. And we create content tuned to a place in that matrix. Then the format is really informed by who that audience is and how they like to best consume content. That said, I think today, with so many channels for distribution, we usually end up with most of those types at some point. I mean, the pillar piece, maybe a webcast, or the pillar piece, excuse me, is often a an ebook. But at the end of the day, we often end up with all of the different formats, if you will.
Yeah, I love the way you just continue to simplify things. And I think the reason that you can simplify things is because you have really done a lot of work to understand who your customer is. And when you think about any company, truly being able to understand who the customer is, and then that tells you what content, what type of content, you know, where the content should go, what channels it should be in. And I think that's one of the things, Helen, that I always understand whenever I talk to you, is that you guys have done a lot of work on understanding who the customer is. And even within your company, I think I'd use the term from you, you're the customer maven for the organization. And I think having that leadership that says, you know, guys, I will facilitate the discussion so that we can all come to a common understanding of who our customer is and how we engage with them. Again, I just think that's a highly, highly impactful thing to do across an organization. And so, again, I think these approaches are certainly things that you've been able to shape over the last 4 years. And but just go back to I'm going to go back to creating the content again. And I heard you say that the editorial calendar is fluid, but still the fact that you can say about 30%, you know, needs to be nimble. And I also love the interviews that you do to create that calendar. And so when you think about, you know, how you create your editorial calendar, what is the process for like content production? Like, once you have decided we're going to create this piece of content, do all those content production pieces, is that under your purview or is that another part of the company? I mean, how does the production process work?
Yeah, operations is under my purview too. And, you know, we are very scrappy and fast moving. So how does it happen? It happens by it's simple. We assign the content creation to somebody, and that somebody and really depends on what is the piece, what is its channel. So if it's a webcast, for example, we will have one of our people, and often one of our subject matter experts or thought leaders, or two of them, prepare the material, prepare their point of view, and develop the slide deck that is that tells that story. Oftentimes, our webcasts are joint with a customer or a partner or some industry luminary, and I facilitate that content being created. But the responsibility for shaping the message and shaping the story is at the end of the day with the subject matter expert. then
absolutely,
then that webcast goes live, and then we take it, and then it's possibly creating the slide shares or the ebooks or the blog posts. Then that falls to a writer on the marketing team or the programs person in demand gen, wherever, depending on the channel, right? Whatever makes the most sense.
Okay. So, again, within your organization, you have control of those resources, which I think is just awesome. I also, because you guys have been doing this for a while, and it's not like everybody starts from scratch every single time, the messages that need to resonate are clear, which then makes it easy for someone to write something or for someone to reproduce something because we've all agreed to what those messages are. So I have two more questions for you, and wow, this has been so insightful. So one of the questions that we had talked about beforehand, again, because I'm so fascinated with the fact that your CEO had the vision to say, if you take a look at growing a company, if you take a look at gaining competitive advantage, I understand that it's this new digital world, content, because it is the currency of conversation, the thought leadership, right, is going to be so incredibly important. So, Helen, what do you think would have happened in the company over the last 4 years if this editor-in-chief role had not been put into place?
I don't know if that's one of those unknowables, Debbie, but a few thoughts. We probably wouldn't have the marketing engine that we have today. We really often say that all of our marketing efforts are fueled by content. That's everything from PR to demand gen to our partner programs. So we have managed to really have a robust fuel for all of those programs. We probably wouldn't have the company DNA that really gets it, that gets the value of content for customers and prospective customers. A company DNA that gets the value of our content for a market leadership position. And without that, I wouldn't be able to deliver on this because it takes a village. It takes everybody who is a thought leader being able to contribute to this. And I think we would not be seen as the leaders we are in the space that we are today. We are privileged to be positioned in the leaders quadrant of a Gartner Magic Quadrant for Application Services and Governance this year. And we were placed in that leader. Thank you. We were placed in that quadrant based on our two things, ability to execute and our completeness of vision. And we were the furthest of all vendors for completeness of vision. And I really believe that that criteria reflects our ability to understand market trends, to lead and influence those market trends, and to be agile and yet consistent following those trends. So that there, I think, is the definition of thought leadership.
And I would also argue that you would not have a completeness of vision if you did not have a true understanding of your customer, and that gets expressed in the content that you create.
Yes, absolutely true. I think one of our core tenets as a company is a customer focus, and I know, you know, lots of companies say that, but it is truly, truly embedded in our DNA, and that is absolutely critical. I totally agree. It's critical for the content, and the content is critical for that.
So last question, and this is always one of my very favorite questions. So when you take someone like you, who I call someone like you an unconscious competent, which means you do this so well, you don't even know how well you do that. So think about giving advice to another marketer. And the question that I have for you is, what advice would you give to someone, another marketer who is on this revenue marketing journey, on how to think strategically and to use strategically content?
I think to know that it just doesn't happen by accident. your responsibility in this role is to drive the development of a unique point of view and drive the alignment. I mean, what's the alignment? Aligning thought leadership with corporate and product messaging and goals. Aligning thought leadership appropriately at every stage of the buyer journey. I think there's a misconception out there sometimes that thought leadership is only about flying very high at the very top of the funnel, and I don't think that's true. So I think it's your responsibility to drive that alignment in your company. I would also say you have to drive hard and focus on execution, but you also have to be patient. Delivering sustained value that results in your company being known as a credible source of strategic thinking and as a leader takes time. You know, it's not about cheap tricks to get eyeballs or visits to your site. It's about delivering sustained value to your customers. And that would be my next thing, is stay maniacally customer-focused and be deeply curious and passionate about what you do, and hire people who are that too, and that will see you through.
I just love this advice. I love the idea that this doesn't happen by accident, because as you and I discussed earlier, I see that accidental content marketing, accidental content, everything happening across a lot of companies. I really loved your insight on driving the alignment around the key messages. And again, I think unfortunately a lot of B2B companies, they seem to have lost their way in being able to do that. I really also like your, you know, forget about the cheap tricks and focus on creating sustained value. I think a lot of times marketers feel like they're in the hot spot and they have to create those cheap tricks. So I think that's great advice. And I really love, really, really love, Helen, your advice on being maniacally customer-focused and deeply curious and passionate. I love the curiosity. I read a study recently where it was talking about how managers who show more curiosity actually are more successful managers. And so I absolutely love that. Well, Helen, it has been a delight to interview you today and to get these insights on the role of content in helping a company achieve competitive advantage. So thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Debbie. I really enjoyed the show, and I can't believe a half an hour has already passed.
I told you, it simply flies by. So everyone listening, please plan to join us again. And remember that you can download these interviews from iTunes, or you can listen from your computer at Revenue Marketer Radio. Thanks a lot. And remember, it is a great day to be a revenue marketer.